Have you ever wondered on how we colonize and terraform other planets? Or if astronauts' ice cream is real? Is extraterrestrial exploration limited to robots? Or will humans explore the outside worlds in the near future? What makes rockets launch and satellites broadcast information? Hello everyone, I am your host Athar, and I ask you all to join me in this journey with science. This is a short series where such questions are pondered upon and answered with the help of some special guests. Join us as we deliberate upon these engineering marvels made by the students of MIT Manipal. I present to you Cosmic TED Talks. Hello everyone, welcome to another new episode of Astrobytes. I am Athar, your host for this episode, and joining with me in this panel today is Tanay Gupta, the treasurer of the Astronomy Club. He'll be in this panel with me today. And we have three new amazing speakers from the student project called Thrust MIT. Guys, would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hey everyone, my name is Vyad Mukadam. I am a senior proportion member in Thrust MIT.
Hello everyone, I'm Ronan Mark D'Souza, and I'm the head of avionics in Thrust.
Hello everyone, I'm Imad. I'm team manager of Thrust MIT.
All right. Before getting to know more about the student project, which is Thrust MIT, why don't you tell our audience more about what rockets are in general, what their components are, what it does, and so on?
So rockets in general are basically manufactured to carry out certain missions. So rockets in general are manufactured required to specific missions which they have to carry out. So there are certain missions such deep space missions, orbital missions, crewed missions to International Space Station, or cargo missions to International Space Station. So for this, there to carry out such specific of these missions, there has to be different rockets. So for example, if we go back to early 1970s, we can think of the Apollo missions which were sent to Mars.
Sent
to the moon. So the Saturn V rocket, which you all might know, was the rocket which took Neil Armstrong and two other astronauts to the moon. So that was one of the biggest rockets ever built. It was launched from the legendary launch pad 39A in Cape Canaveral.
NASA is also going on, going back to the moon with the latest
Artemis mission. Artemis missions.
So the space launch system, the newest NASA's newest rocket, is set to launch on November 14th, if I'm not wrong. Do watch it out. And yeah, so there are other manufacturers such as SpaceX, which is widely known for its autonomous landing. They have their crewed own crewed mission name, their own crewed capsule named Dragon spacecraft.
So basically, these days rocket are helping us in various missions, like our GPS systems work on satellites which were put into orbit by rockets. And also recently SpaceX has been doing a lot of stuff with Starlink, which is an internet service provider for high speed internet which you can access through anywhere. And recently I also read that you could access Wi-Fi just like home from your airplanes. So there's going to be no airplane mode on, I think Apple is working on something like that with satellites. So if you have an emergency SOS, your phone will directly communicate with the satellites. All of these satellites which are sent through rockets to the orbit, right? So these are few applications of where we can use rockets. Few other things would be for people related in astronomy, where they've sent the Hubble telescope, which captured really great images.
And the James Webb telescope.
James Webb Space Telescope. All of this gives us a great insight into how deep space is, and especially if you can compare the images of pillars of creation that we've seen. So something that a lot of astro fans would love to watch. So you have pillars of creation, which was taken by Hubble Space Telescope, and they have improved a lot with the JSWT.
Cosmic curtains, especially.
Also, let's not forget about Sun Daring Parker Solar Probe.
So definitely, I've heard a lot of very important uses of rockets. I mean, without them, I believe the world would have been much, much different. Like, not at all what we would have it now. So there are a few scientific
like terms and theories which come into play when we are talking about rockets. So why don't you explain those terms, if any, in simple words?
Okay, so one of the major terms that come into rocket is thrust. So thrust is basically the powering force of the rocket that takes it off the launch pad and gets it to wherever it wants, like above one common line, orbit, space, or whatsoever. The second term that comes into play is drag. So drag is nothing but your air resistance, which you were told to ignore in 11th and 12th physics classes. So there are many types of drags that come into play. Like you have the pass, like you have the skin drag on the rocket surface. Mm-hmm. Then you have the base drag, that is due to the difference in cross-section area from one portion to the other. Now, for more terms, let me give you a simple scenario to imagine. Let's say there's a rocket flying vertically upwards with an upward force thrust, two downward force, weight, and drag. Let's say now there's a gust of wind, okay, blowing towards the rocket, and it tilts the rocket, let's say about 30 degrees with respect to the vertical axis. And now the rocket is slightly inclined. So when you talk about this, so let's say it is inclined by 30 degrees. And now a new component comes into play called lift. So usually there are two concentrated points on the rocket. One is center of gravity, where your thrust and your weight acts along. And then you have center of pressure, so where your lift and drag acts along. So what the lift does is, it kind of goes into restoring your rocket into its original orientation. So it's more like bringing about the stability in the rocket. There are many other factors too that affect stability, but let's not go into that. That's a bit too deep.
Right, definitely has explained all of these very complicated scientific terms in very simple words. I think the audience can imagine them in their minds without bringing too many mathematical graphs into their minds.
Yeah, that scenario was pretty good. Like, could imagine how a rocket works actually. So yeah, coming to know about thrust MID itself, we all know that thrust is one of the most respected and accomplished wind projects in Manipal. Right, so why don't you tell the audience more about what thrust is, what its subsystems are, and the primary focus or goal, whatever.
Okay, so Thrust MIT is a student project which focuses on building rockets, more specifically high power rockets, which the rockets that we make are designed to fly to an apogee of around 3.3 kilometers or 10,000 feet, something that we've achieved this year, by the way, our latest rocket.
Nice.
And mainly the entire purpose of having high power rocketry is to conduct certain experiments that we've thought of and try to give a research output on these things which people might be pondering about, right? Mainly, thrust is divided into several subsystems. Now, when it comes to rockets, the most important aspect would be aerodynamics, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a subsystem which concentrates on aerodynamics. And with aerodynamics, we have multiple stuff related research is going on right now. Like we have leading edge extensions, which is a current work that Thrust is doing. Also about other subsystems, when it comes to rockets, we need propulsions to lift the rocket up into the sky, which is a major component of the entire mission. So we have a propulsion subsystem, which takes care of the motor. The motor is something that is manufactured by us, and we also participate in a competition where we get commercially manufactured motors, about which we will talk about later. But the entire purpose of this motor, okay, the motor is a solid rocket propellant, about which Rayat could talk about.
So as my friend Ronan said, okay, we use a solid rocket motor. So basically the fuel that we use, so what does solid rocket motor means? So it means that our propellant is solid. So it's not that hi-fi liquids that you've all heard of, hydrogen and oxygen. So basically what we do is we take your everyday sugar, and we take potassium nitrate and we mix them together in a certain ratio and we make a propellant. This itself is proved to be a very good propellant back in the 1980s and has been used for a lot of amateur rocketry. And right now we are implementing those in our projects.
Current project, okay.
Okay,
and
also,
obviously it is advised never to make this propellant at home.
Yeah, even though
please try this at home is the disclaimer which we would like to give right now.
This is the reason why I didn't mention the issue.
Fair enough.
Also, talking about other subsystems, we have structures. The people that actually manufacture the rocket, they mold the body tubes, they build the entire structure of the rocket, which gives us an idea of the forces that may impact all of the physical components of the rocket. And most importantly is the subsystem that I am in, avionics, which is without which I think a rocket would not be a rocket, but would be a missile because
of course.
We need to recover a rocket. And this recovery is done through student research and developed flight computer that we manufacture here in our workshops. Also taking care of data telemetry that the data that we get from the rocket is sent back to the ground station. All of this is done by the avionics department, and also more interesting stuff like controls, like Ryan mentioned earlier about the rocket tilting to 30 degrees. Now, how do we get this back to a stable position? Now, there's obviously a lift, which is going to passively tilt your rocket, but to actively tilt your rocket, we have stuff like, let's say your rocket is in the motor burn phase where your motor is just burning, right? There we could use something known as thrust vector control, which essentially moves your motor. So it's like a nozzle which can move. And when this moves, you can orient the rocket in a much better way to reach a certain apogee. Also, there are certain other control aspects like fin controls, which let you control the orientation of the rocket. There is another subsystem that is the payload and research, without which there's no purpose of the rocket actually. So the entire purpose of the rocket is defined by this subsystem, where they come up with an idea for a payload. So the entire team brainstorms for an idea for the payload and something that can give us a good research output. And we also make sure that this payload can satisfy all the requirements needed for our computation, which is there's some certain design criteria that we need to take care of.
Before that, so as Ronan said, without the payload, our whole purpose is not there. That reason being is because we built a sounding rocket. So when you talk about sounding rockets, the main purpose is to get a particular scientific payload up to a particular apogee and then let it perform whatever scientific measures it wanted to take. And then we get the payload back down on Earth, and then we collect the data, and then we do go ahead with our research papers or projects or whatever based on the data.
Sounding rockets are in a way a cost-efficient manner to actually perform experiments, which can be used to simulate how the experiment will behave in outer space.
So we have another subsystem, which is the management subsystem, which takes care of all of the funds we require, all of the social media publicity we require, and taking care of all of the logistics for our rocket and making sure that we have a really easy time to go to the competition.
Right. So over the past few years, I've seen that Thrust has developed and manufactured four main scale or real size rockets named Vyom, Arya, Phoenix, and of course the Pokemon fans will like this, Rayquaza. Why don't you tell the audience more about these projects and any upcoming rocket project by Thrust this year or the next year?
Okay, so the rocket that Thrust MIT debuted to Spaceport America was... Spaceport America is the competition that we participate in. It happens in Las Cruces in New Mexico, where a lot of teams, like the few countries participate in this competition where a lot of universities represent their colleges. And there are several teams from India, and Thrust MIT is one of them. So the debut launch for Thrust MIT at SA Cup was Viome, which was the first ever main scale rocket that we developed. Now this happened in 2018, where Thrust was fairly new. And talking about the technical specifications of the rocket that we built, it was in-house manufactured, like okay. All of the components were in-house manufactured. And we participated in a category called 10K COTS. What 10K COTS means is you have 10K, that is the apogee that we need to reach, that is 10,000 feet. Okay. And COTS meaning commercially off the shelf, which is the motor class. So the problem with India is we have a lot of regulations for motors. We cannot procure motors which are made of ammonium perchlorate. Now, the reason that we prefer using ammonium perchlorate is because of because of its efficiency, if I'm not wrong. And this is the motor that we purchased for our rockets that launch at SA Cup were commercially manufactured by a US manufacturer. Talking about the entire body of the rocket, it was made of glass fiber, again, which was manufactured in-house. And all of it was, the entire rocket was 26 kgs in weight. And this rocket won us the debut award for Spaceport America Cup. And it reached an apogee of 1.2 kilometers, which was way short of our targeted apogee, actually. But since it was our first ever rocket, it was a pretty good performance for us.
Right.
Talking about the next rocket that we built was Arya. Now, Arya was again designed in a similar way, where we had to reach 10K and we were using a COTS motor again. This was in 2019. And the rocket was entirely made of carbon fiber except for the avionics bay, because the reason why we did not go with carbon fiber for avionics bay was because we do data telemetry, which requires us to have a radio connection between the rocket and the ground station. The issue with carbon fiber is it does not let these radio frequencies pass through it. So we chose going with a glass fiber part for the avionics bay.
Same as Viome then?
Same as Viome. Viome okay. was entirely built of glass fiber. The reason we chose carbon fiber and glass fiber just for avionics for Arya okay. was because carbon fiber is much lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And and glass fiber provides us the radio telemetry requirements that we require. Now, Arya reached an apogee of around 1.3 kilometers. This was, again, not very satisfactory for us, but this was because of a commercial motor failure. The motor that we had gotten was faulty and the rocket did not reach its desired apogee.
So that was 2019. And unfortunately for 2020, we could not take part due to the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
So, when Space Cup America opened up for 2021, it was completely online, and for that we had submitted Phoenix. So Phoenix was completely online. We did not go to the US for that. All we have to do was submit design reports and show a basic CAD simulations and all to Spaceport, and for that we got a certain awards. Yeah, so we submitted Phoenix online, and when the results came out, we were declared the best in Asia in 2021. And that was a very huge feat for us. We could not have been more proud. And then when it came to 2022.
So when it comes to 2022, Rayquaza was our latest rocket, which we launched at Spaceport America Cup. Again, it featured in-house manufactured carbon fiber body tubes and an M-class rocket motor. It also featured leading edge extensions over its fins. And we are proud to say it was our most successful rocket, which reached an apogee of around 11,600 feet. which is equivalent to 3.5 kilometers. And apart from that, we ranked about third in Asia, 30th overall in our category, and fourth in Barrowman category, which is how close were we to our predicted apogee.
We were just off by around 0.3% of our predicted apogee, which has been the best ever for our performance. As Imad said, we reached an apogee of 3.55 kilometers, and this rocket just shot straight up. It just went.
It was the most beautiful launch of the rocket of that particular day.
I wish you could show it.
Yeah,
I wish you could show it to you guys, but
you guys could head over to thrustmit.in, where we have a video of Rayquaza launching, and it looks really beautiful because that is one of the best things that we could ever see in our time at Thrust, because a lot of people worked on the project, and the ascent of this rocket was really, really, really good.
So, unfortunately, we had a failed recovery. So, our rocket did go up beautifully, but it came down the same speed. So,
there was an issue with us deploying our parachute, and our parachute wasn't deployed initially at apogee. That was the saddest part of this. We just saw the rocket come down, and although the rocket came down, the fins weren't as damaged as we thought they would be. Something that would show all of the simulations that we run for our welding, and it gave us an idea of how structurally sound our rocket was. But for next year's rocket that we have been building, like Tanay asked if we are working on a rocket. Yes, of course we are working on a rocket right now, and this rocket will be going for the SA Cup in 2023, for which we already have gotten selected.
Our category this time would be the same as always, 10k cards. Though we do plan to go SRAT soon in the future, but it's there's still time for that.
Yeah, I have my fingers crossed for the Thrust MITK team right now, and listening to your rocket which has flown up and come down, I mean, it's something to be proud of, no doubt. I've scouted around like other student projects in MIT, and I've seen some like marvelous innovations which they've come up with. For example, there's Project Manas, like I mentioned before, with their Seraphim automated drone. There's MRM, which have their own like novel indigenous AI software for their rover. Is there any innovation from Thrust MIT which has been like indigenously developed, which is a novel innovation which only you have come up with as of now?
Some innovations that we've come up with would be all of the payloads that we've launched in our rocket. Like Rayquaza featured a payload which was studying CNT vibrations.
Carbon nanotubes vibrations.
Okay.
And then Phoenix was supposed to have a payload which was based on piezoelectric devices, but unfortunately this didn't go, so we did not get data. But other innovations would include mostly in controls, where we've tried to develop in-house fin controls.
Mm-hmm.
Fin controls is something that lets you orient your rocket in, let's say you, so basically how a rocket works is you launch your rocket, you have your boost phase. Boost phase is where your solid rocket propellant is still burning. And then after this boost phase, you have a coasting phase.
Okay.
Like I mentioned earlier, we have TVC, thrust vector control, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is mainly active during the burn phase because you're moving the motor.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go into the coasting phase, moving the motor won't orient your rocket in a way because there's no thrust coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So to counter such an issue, we have something known as fin controls, where you move the fins to orient the rocket. This could be done in the coasting phase and even the burn phase. So we've developed a model for these fin controls. And talking about Rayquaza, we were off by 0.3% in our apogee. To get more closer to the desired apogee, we've come up with a system for air brakes. So basically, let's say we predict the apogee of the rocket as the rocket is going up.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say the apogee is shooting, overshooting.
Okay.
We deploy these air brakes, creating more drag, which is going to make sure that our rocket doesn't overshoot our desired apogee.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a predicted apogee which we have to reach. Let's say it's 10,000 feet, and let's say our rocket is overshooting to about 10,500 feet.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the flight computer on board will predict this, and then it will deploy the air brakes in a certain state which is deployable depending on the velocity of the rocket. And then once it's deployed, it creates a lot of drag, and the predicted apogee comes down. And then once it reaches of around 10,050 feet or somewhere around that, we shut down the air brakes, making sure that our rocket reaches close to the apogee, making us get an upper hand at the Barrowman ranking for Spaceport America Cup. And several other projects that we've been working on is mostly controls based.
Okay.
And we've been working on a Steward platform to have a stability in any payload that we require on
okay.
the rocket. And then we also are working on a test bed that is to test our SRAD motors, something that we have completely manufactured in-house. The test bed is something that helps us test our motors, the ones that the propulsion department is testing. So we have several sensors around this, which gives you an idea of the thrust time curve of the motor burn time, the amount of thrust that all of this is generating, and how much apogee we could get with such a motor, and
mm-hmm.
also map its efficiency.
Okay, so of course, I think you've told us a bit about this, but like, can you tell the audience more about the competition you've participated in, since Thrust MIT is, of course, a competition-driven student project. Thrust is participating in the Spaceport America Cup held last year by ESRA, that is Experimental Sounding Rocket Association. Tell us more about this competition and your experiences in them.
Okay, so Spaceport America Cup is the only competition Thrust MIT participates in. This is a rocketry competition which is held in New Mexico, where several teams showcase their rockets and general rocketry skills of launching a sounding rocket to an apogee of around 10k feet or 30k feet. There's several categories in this competition. We have 10k COTS, we have 10k SRAD, we have 30k COTS, we have 30k SRAD. Now, these SRAD and COTS are again divided into more branches depending on the type of propellant you use. So you have solid rocket propellant, you have hybrid propellant where your oxidizer is different from your fuel.
Uh-huh.
In your solid rocket motor, I think the oxidizer and the fuel is mixed in a ratio, right?
Yeah, so when it comes to solid, we mix the fuel and the oxidizer together. When it comes to liquid, we don't do that. So we have separately, we have the fuel coming in, separately we have the oxidizer coming in. And then they mix together in the chamber area, and then they ignite and they ignite and combustion goes through, and then it comes out the nozzle.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the several categories that SA Cup has.
Right.
The 30k COTS is something that is pretty challenging for us, but we could be going for something like this in 1 or 2 years. We've been trying for SRAD as well, something that we want to develop on our own, and which is why we've set up the vertical test bed. We have more manufacturing going on for that. And once that's ready, we would be testing our motors and see how efficient we could make our motors. Also, talking more about the competition, we have a Barrowman ranking, which is basically giving you an idea of how close you are to the apogee. And like we mentioned earlier, Rayquaza was our best rocket, which came fourth in the Barrowman ranking with an error percentage of
0.3%.
Mm. There is another part of the competition which judges your payload. Now, your payload is something, again, the entire purpose of your sounding rocket. In SA Cup, what we can do is we either send a dead mass, which is a non-functional payload. Now, mm-hmm. dead mass is something we have a criteria that our payload should be 8.8 pounds.
Okay.
Right. So we need to satisfy this criteria. In our rocket VOM, we had a dead mass because we did not actually have a functional payload in there. So we had a dead mass of around 8.8 pounds, which just flew on the rocket and did nothing. Whereas Arya, Phoenix, and Rayquaza, all of these featured functional payloads, which actually did performed experiments and gave us some sort of data back, something that we could study. Also, there's SDL payload challenge, which judges this and gives us 100 additional points for having a really good functional payload.
I see. And I've also heard of Thrust having a lot of publications and grants under its name for various domains of research. Can you tell us about the most notable and important ones, etc.? And also about any tie-ups or collaborations with various organizations, maybe sponsors?
So we have few ongoing research projects going on in Thrust. Few of them are aerodynamics related, like we have leading edge extensions. Something that minimizes flow separation in the rocket. And we also have research on the flight computers that we use. There's one research which is ongoing called the S3FC. It's the Series 3 flight computer which was developed for Phoenix. We've written few algorithms for detecting the apogee. We've written few things for telemetry and so that the packet loss is very minimal, and all of this is being part of this research and gives us a good understanding of how electronics and all of these radio telemetry things would work for us. Few other ongoing research projects would be like we've been working on a software for our plotting. So we have a ground station, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
And with just data over there, it doesn't make sense. So what we do is we visualize all of this data using graphs. We have a 3D model of the rocket showing you how the rocket is in real time. So we receive data telemetry from the rocket, and this software will show you the predicted path of the rocket, the orientation of the rocket in real time, the thrust curves or several other factors like the velocity of the rocket, the deployment of the air brakes, and all of this would be displayed on this piece of software. And few other things avionics related would be an antenna tracker system.
Okay.
Now, what we generally do is we have a Yagi antenna, something that we use for telemetry with the rocket. What we did up until now was we manually pointed the antenna at the rocket, but now we want to develop a antenna tracker which automatically tracks the rocket and gives us good data telemetry. Now, the reason we want to go with something like this is because we do not want information loss. So this will just point out at the rocket. Mm-hmm. And let's say if the rocket takes a trajectory which we did not predict, then this antenna tracker would help us to get the precise point of the rocket and track it. And since machine learning and all of these concepts have been trending these days, we've tried to implement an image segmentation algorithm, which will basically we have cameras on the rocket, which will give you an idea of what is below the rocket. Now, with image segmentation, we can analyze if the ground station or wherever the rocket is going to land is safe to land. Now, let's say if there is water, and if we are able to develop something like an RCS system. RCS is basically reaction control system, which helps you orient the rocket or steer the rocket when it's coming down. It comes down with parachutes, so you can steer the parachute and make sure it lands in a place where it's going to cause minimal damage to the rocket, right? So this is also something that we've been working on. And other things would include analyzing the horizon, which would also give us an estimated altitude of the rocket.
Acha. Yeah, so those are some very, very interesting research projects which you've been working on. Lastly,
I want to know more about your experiences working in the student project Thrust MIT. Like, how it has been these past 2 years, how your people have worked, and what skills you've developed, and so on and so on. And also, there are quite a few people who are listening to this podcast right now who are interested in this field, which is rocketry and engineering in general. So I want to know if you people have any thoughts or tips and tricks for them as well.
So when it comes to student projects, usually it's a great place to, you know, get hands-on experience on, you know, certain projects. So let's say you want to, let's take our case in rocket engineering. It's a really good hands-on on what, like, let's say you have a certain interest and all this. So it's a really good hands-on experience on building rockets. And me, as like, you know, I've always wanted to, you know, get into this field of, you know, aerospace and all that stuff. So, and it was a really good experience. And it's a, first of all, a great place to make friends too. You get a lot of connections and it gives a good college experience.
Fair.
Talking about my experience with Thrust, these 2 years have been really good for me. I've learned a lot of stuff related to electronics and how rockets work in general. We've learned a lot of stuff in terms of team bonding, working as a team, and understanding several problems that might creep in during making a rocket, actually.
Yeah, the same goes the same way. It has been a joyous opportunity for all of us. What I feel is we all share that passion for rocketry, and that's what makes us bond together so well with each other. We have that shared goal, and which makes us all work harder towards achieving new things. And yeah, it's been a tremendous opportunity for all of us working together.
We are just a bunch of guys that love to watch launches that several space organizations does. On Discord at night, maybe. Also, we've been actively talking about several other projects like Artemis mission.
Any final thoughts or tips and tricks on if whoever is interested to join in such a field and want to pursue this field as a career? Any thought for them?
Personally, I would suggest to find a group of people whom with you share the same interest. Learn together, try to experiment.
Or you can approach us.
Yeah,
exactly. Definitely.
Second year recruitments later on.
Yeah. Also, talking about career opportunities, I think there's a lot of private space organizations coming up in India. Like,
yeah.
We could talk about Skyroot Aerospace. It's going to be the first ever private space organization in India which is going to launch a rocket to space.
Yeah, it's going to launch on about 15th or 16th December. The launch window is about 15th to 20th December.
Now, this is something that is really interesting because if people are going to work for something like this, it's going to make space more free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we could be launching rockets privately developed, and we could also send satellites that we would require for our experiments. There's also a program called Space Kids, which makes payloads and launches them. It's a group of student projects from several countries, and they build satellites and put them into orbit.
Listening to you people nerd out about rocketry, and it's a wonderful experience for myself listening to all this. I think Tane can watch for this as well.
True.
Yeah. With this, we come to the end of this podcast. Thank you so much, Raheed, Ronan, and Imad for joining in for this episode today. It has been a very wonderful and informative episode, and we shall see you all very soon. Thank you so much. Before we go, I think Imad has something to say about the upcoming project of Thrust MIT.
So this is a bit interesting thing. The name of our upcoming rocket which was finalized today, by the way, is actually named, I'll just give you a hint, it is actually named on a brightest star in a particular constellation. So feel free to look up into the several constellations and their brightest star.
We also would be having our rocket reveal once it's manufactured and ready. And that is when you guys will be
knowing what the name of the rocket is.
Trust me, the name is beautiful, has a great meaning too. And a good reference. It has its foot in pop culture.
Definitely excited to hear the name of the new rocket which you people are developing right now. So yeah, stay tuned for their own name reveals and stay tuned for the upcoming podcast from Astrobytes. Thank you so much for tuning in.